Hi everyone, welcome back to Birdwatching. This is a podcast about the cultural impact and legacy of the crow, and I am your host, Randy. And today we're taking a detour that I thought I wasn't going to be making at this point, but turns out I am. Last time I know I said that we were going to discuss tabletop adaptations of the crow, and I have since sidestepped into the next watchable adaptation in the timeline, so let's get into it. A couple weeks ago, I was looking through my, I call it checking the traps for news about the Crow reboot that's currently filming in Prague and Munich, and there was a Prague press release that said, oh, this adaptation is actually going to be a TV series. Now, I have heard no other word of this from any other source. I'm not totally convinced that it wasn't a mistranslation, etc., so don't put all your eggs in that basket, but if true, it would not be the first time that The Crow has been adapted to TV. Let's get into it. Today we're talking about The Crow, Stairway to Heaven. The Crow, Stairway to Heaven originally aired from September 25th, 1998 to May 22nd, 1999. The only other piece of media outside of the first film to feature Eric Draven on screen. The only Crow TV show at this point in history, and an oddly compelling experiment that was too weird to live and has since been too rare to die. So, for a quick recap, let's recount the events of Stairway to Heaven. The first two episodes are a made-for-TV remake of the first Crow film with a few added details. Shelley is granted photography as a character trait. There is an afterlife on another plane of existence that looks like a bridge I once walked across at Girl Scout camp, and of course no one can cuss or use drugs or reference any sexual assault that occurred against Shelley, so it's all very, I mean, I don't want to say squeaky clean because there's like crimes and stuff, but like, it's different. The vibe is different. It's also worth noting a couple of other character dynamics that kind of are changed for this. Sarah is still very much present, as is her mom. Eric still kind of gives Sarah's mom, like, puts the fear of God into her, which is, you know, great. Sarah's mom, Darla, ends up being, like, a huge character in the series and ends up, like, clerking for Detective Albrecht / Officer Albrecht, depending on when you're watching. He gets promoted and demoted around a couple times. They also have put a lot of focus into making the Crow a, like, a buddy cop thing. Eric and Albrecht are pretty consistently just solving crimes around town. Nothing really supernatural most of the time, just solving crimes. Sometimes there's even very little supernatural about it, which is a choice, but I don't mind. I truly believe that the Crow devolves into a buddy cop for about 10 minutes at the end of the first film. And it worked pretty well there. It doesn't work all the time in the show. There's also a lot of time spent on Eric doing, like, normal stuff because they have chosen to make the Crow and Eric Draven sort of separate entities. So, like, most of the time Eric is just some dude who's, like, kicking around, who's, like, a little sad. And then when, like, injustices are being committed or he has to fight his way out of a situation or he needs, like, supernatural guidance, the Crow makeup, like, magically appears on his face. And he is, like, the Crow. And then it goes away and he's just, like, a guy again. But he's also, like, still not, like, he's also still dead, though. They play with it a little bit. It's not amazing. Shelley also appears pretty often from the other side. They keep the sort of apartment design inspired by the film. Obviously, the budget was a lot lower. So that broken circular window plays, like, a huge part in the show, and a lot of characters comment on why it's still broken, but it's so Eric can talk to Shelley on the other side sometimes. It's not a bad way to keep Shelley from being sidelined totally. I'm always a fan of getting more characters in the mix, but it's a choice. And the CGI that they use to do the window thing is not great, but it's like 1998, 1999, you know, we're getting there. These are interesting ideas attempting to be fleshed out, and I have to give them credit for that. I will say, though, the thing that I am the least enthused about is just watching Eric Draven, like, get a job and pay rent, which, yes, is part of these episodes. He gets a job as a bouncer at the bar where his band used to play. we have have to watch a lot of, like, Eric Draven struggles to be alive after dying and doing normal things. It's not what I would choose to focus on in a Crow TV show, but maybe some people found it charming. Moving on with our episode recap, the next arc after that retelling of the first film, there's like a gang that crashes people's houses and breaks in and steals stuff, and there's like a kid who's like kind of repentant about it, but like kind of not. And the only thing that I really want to mention about this episode is that Rob Zombie's Dracula plays in it, bringing the amount of Crow media that utilizes a Rob Zombie song up to 3. In the next episode, we learn that the CEO of Eric's record label put a hit on him, and that's something. It's also worth mentioning, I forgot to mention this in our first recap, apologies, but we do not kill Fun Boy in this series. He goes to prison and finds God and stays out of trouble. Like, most, and like a good amount of the villains from the first film, the gang members are alive. They're just like in prison or incapacitated. This comes back later. And then we learn that a businessman's daughter was killed and the cops blame the boyfriend, and they have to sort that one out. Eric and Albrecht, and sometimes Sarah, and sometimes Darla, and sometimes Shelley. And the next episode is a circus episode, which is usually pretty fun in these kind of supernatural sitcom-y buddy cop things. And of course, there's someone at the circus who is actually psychic and is like, Eric, you're dead. What's going on here? It's kind of the whole episode. The next episode involves a criminal that Albrecht arrested like years prior, kidnapping him and bringing him to an abandoned island where he hunts him for sport. And Eric is just kind of there to help sometimes. I don't know. I'm kind of flabbergasted at how a lot of these episodes came to be. And not even in a mean way, just in, I would have never thought of this kind of thing. The next episode, somebody steals Shelley's identity and is using it to get away with crimes. Which is, I can see that. Okay, and the next one, we come back to the gang members still being alive but incarcerated. Top Dollar goes insane after the 30 hours of pain plot point, where Eric sort of transfers all of the trauma from Shelley's death onto Top Dollar. That still happens, and he just goes insane, though. He doesn't just like die on the spot, you know? And so in this episode, Top Dollar stops being insane, but the Skull Cowboy shows up, as you might have heard in our last, Devil's Night special, The Long Life and Career of the Skull Cowboy. He just kind of shows up and is like, I am here and I know things. Shelley enters the physical plane. She takes control of some other lady who's around sometimes. And this whole ends with Eric killing Top Dollar, like, for real, and his, like, crow guide is like, okay, you have strayed from the path, so I'm gonna go. This is a thing that I expected would have happened earlier in the series, the sort of abandoning and left to wander thing, because we do need Eric to wander around to have a full series of television. It would be insanely hard to stretch out, like, 2 nights of stuff at the most, into like a full season of TV. So I expected this to happen earlier, but it does leave us pretty aimless for the rest of the season. The whole thing is about Eric fighting for redemption to go back and be with Shelley, of course, and Shelley refusing to cross to the other side until Eric can make it with her. How this is going to happen, nobody knows, and nobody has any answers. And then things get even weirder. The next arc focuses on a reincarnation story arc. Eric and Shelley in a past life. They're on, like, the frontier. Eric is an Indian, and Shelley is a pastor's daughter. It ends the same way, though, with both of their tragic deaths. This episode is whatever. I found it vaguely, squicky. I don't know what the correct terminology would be. This obviously is a pull from Dead Time, which of course had been published at this point. It's basically the exact story, but different names. Because that is also basically just the exact concept of the Crow. Interesting that this is something that they would choose to adapt into the series. I don't know how I feel about the reincarnation thing as a part of the Eric and Shelley arc. I don't love it. The next episode is about a stuntman who is about to do like a really dangerous motorcycle jump on TV. And he's doing it because his son, his very young child, died. And he's like, well, I might as well join my kid. And then, but the ghost of the kid is like hanging out with Eric, because I think they're buried in the same graveyard. And is like, hey, tell my dad not to do that. Casey, the kid, also, occurs later in the series as well. He's in the finale. Turns out he's the producer's kid, I believe. They have the same last name. So, you ain't slick. Just kidding. he's okay. This episode's kind of interesting. It's a good one-and-done arc. There's some good stuff to explore there. I actually didn't mind this one that much. And then in the next one, Eric tries to force open a portal that connects him to Shelley and ends up letting a demonic spirit out to wreak havoc. I don't remember anything about this one in particular. My notes don't have much, but that happens. And the next one, Albrecht is doing, you know, police things, you know, trying to stop crimes or whatever it is the police think they do. And Eric becomes like a henchman for one of them. This one was also really dumb. I don't know how this worked. And then we get into probably the most interesting arc of the series, in which Albrecht arrests Eric for murdering Shelley. He's on trial for his own murder. This is honestly the sort of thing that I would have expected to happen earlier in the series. I'm surprised it took them this long to get to this sort of thing. It's a choice. Again, I don't really want to see the Crow in jail. I want him to do his business and return to the afterlife. But it only makes sense that if he stuck around long enough and, you know, had a job and rent to pay, that people would be like, didn't you die? And then in the next episode, while Eric is in jail and on trial, the Skull Cowboy shows up and they do a time loop episode. They send Eric back in time to try and prevent their deaths. It doesn't work, but we do have sort of an It's a Wonderful Life. It's literally called It's a Wonderful Death. Like I said, I really didn't like this portrayal of the Skull Cowboy. I think he's great, and I enjoy hanging out with him. He's doing something. Eric's guilty sentence gets overruled, and he's free after 6 months of imprisonment. And that's something. But at this point, I'm starting to lose my marbles a little bit with the show. It's not an easy... There's just so much going on, and so much of it is just not very interesting if you like The Crow. The aesthetics are not anywhere near goth. The budget for the show is clearly pretty low, which is fine. That's how TV worked, especially back then. But there's just no panache, and a lot of it's very samey. And just directions that I don't really want to see the Crow in. But then, this next episode, we get the best thing to happen. The next episode introduces us to, bar none, the best character on the show. I am delighted to inform everyone that we have finally gotten our first on-screen female Crow portrayal, with the amazingly talented Bobbi Phillips portraying Hannah Foster, a woman who is brought back from the grave to avenge her and her daughter's death. And Miss Bobbi Phillips just absolutely crushes in this episode. Everything is going for her. Like, the writing really connects with her. It's clear they really loved and cherished this character. I really love this episode. She's a lot more aggressive than Eric in the series. She's, like, totally embracing the undead revenger thing. In fact, she gets a little bit too aggressive. She also is kind of, there's sort of a parallel between both of them, sort of maybe taking it a little too far and staying on the earth a little bit longer than they should. Hannah completes her mission of revenge in this episode, but she does appear later. There's an episode in between this one. There's an episode or two in between her appearances. But this is her first one, and it's just a banger. I love her. Like, I genuinely think she's the best part of the show. I would have watched just the entire Hannah Foster show. The only thing I'm not into is they try to give her a, like, other name. Like, they try to be like, that's Talon. She's the other one. I'm like, no, she's just the Crow. Anyone can be the Crow. That's, like, the whole point. So, what can you do? Anyway, we take a break from Miss Hannah Foster for two episodes, and we get a kind of boring thing that involves a group called the Lazarus Group, who are, like, trying to be immortal. This is all very stolen from Batman. It's all very, like, a secret society trying to live forever, and they're like, hey, Eric seems to be living forever. Let's talk to that guy. And you're like, I've seen this. It's not very good. The next episode is a little bit better, though. Eric joins back with Hangman's Joke, who are indeed characters in the story, and he's got, like, a melody line that won't leave him alone, and it's, like, kind of driving him crazy. This started out really fire for me, and it kind of devolved into nothingness once again. But thankfully, in the next episode, Anna is back, and her and Eric stop like a human trafficking ring from taking kids. And again, Hannah gets like a little too aggressive, and you're like, oh, is she gonna be like damned to wander the earth? Because like her mission's over, you know. She does move on at the end. I was very sad to see Miss Foster depart from the show at this point. Her two episodes occasionally get packaged together into, I believe it's called Witch Eyes. It's like it gets packaged as a single movie in other countries that's just about her, which tells you how much she fucking rules. After Hannah Foster's departure, we get another notable episode, mostly for its guest star. We learn that Eric has a half-brother named Chris. I believe the idea is that they grew up in the foster care system together in Detroit. We kind of get like a little bit of like Eric's tragic childhood backstory, which is like a choice. I'm not mad at it, but it's something. Chris is played by Corey Feldman, which is kind of insane. They've outfitted him very strangely and have given him some pretty wild facial hair. I'm withholding judgment. Trying to be impartial, but I don't think it works on him. Chris gets into a bit of trouble and Eric has to go save him. It's a little weird. This episode is mostly notable for Corey Feldman being there. I didn't find a lot in it that I latched onto other than that. The next episode deals with vaguely the Russian Orthodox Church. Yes, you heard that correctly. The Russian Orthodox Church is a plot point in The Crow, Stairway to Heaven. There's a guy who wants to resurrect Rasputin and, like, get his magical powers. Because that's what we do in this show. We want to bring people back from the dead so we can take their stuff. Be it powers or just stuff. This has happened, like, 6 times at this point. They refuse to say things like God or orthodoxy, or they refuse to like comment on religion in the episode, which is weird because they have basically centered a religious sect into it. It's very interesting. I don't know. Before we get into the last two episodes, I just want to note a couple subplots that have been happening around all of this. Sarah stays a consistent character, getting into trouble, helping out the cops, going on the internet. There's a lot of early internet usage from Sarah. And Darla is there too. They don't really set her up with Albrecht like I thought they were going to at the beginning. They bring in another detective, Detective Capshaw, to sort of be Albrecht's foil. Capshaw gets promoted over Albrecht at one point because everyone's like, Albrecht is working with this guy that's a loose cannon, and it's Eric. And so there's still a lot of, like, Albrecht is a good cop, but he keeps getting penalized for being a good cop, so, like, whatever. Sarah do be skateboarding, she do be, you know, quipping about as kid actors do. There's a revolving cast of people at the Blackout, which is the bar in the episode, and we do get that wonderfully 90s thing where, like, cool up-and-coming bands play on the show. Obviously, we're going to be doing a Coda episode to talk more about the music that is used within the series, but there is a consistent amount of performances, songs featured, very 90s, very Buffy, which a lot of Buffy comparisons, honestly, with the show. There's a couple of loose sort of will they, won't they love interest for Eric, who's obviously still very, very into Shelley. The episode where Shelley takes over a woman's body, of course, has some romantic elements. There's a lot of people trying to get with the Crow, and it's just not happening. Skull Cowboy weaves in and out for a couple episodes. There's a lot of subplots going on, but honestly, most of them don't amount to anything in this particular season. Maybe they would have in another one. And a lot of it's just, like, cop procedural stuff with Albrecht, so I haven't mentioned it yet because I'm trying to just get through the storylines. One thing I'm surprised they didn't spend more time on was Sarah's relationship with Darla. Darla never really struggles with sobriety or kicking the life of crime once she starts working at the police station. And Sarah doesn't really ever have a whole lot of beef with her. They have a couple tips, but I don't know, it's interesting because that sort of element propelled a lot of the drama in the first film. And even in City of Angels, there's a sad backstory with Sarah and her mom that just, it feels like they wanted to go that direction, but again, the show is so hesitant to talk about any, like, sex, drugs, rock and roll kind of stuff, that it feels very sanitized in that way, so it's easier to just have Darla be magically sober forever, despite doing hard drugs. It's interesting to note. I mentioned earlier that it was important to keep in mind that Eric and the Crow are kind of two separate entities sharing a body, if you will, in this sort of thing. And the bird itself does still stick around and guide and help with, like, crime scene stuff, which is kind of fun. But the leader of that aforementioned Batman ripoff, the Lazarus group, manages to kind of split the Crow and Eric from the body. So there's two Erics running around. His, like, normal self that has been, you know, like, paying rent and hanging out. And then, like, the one that's always in the Crow makeup who's quippy and has, like, a bloodlust. And also Shelley is back in this episode. She's, like, briefly back on the mortal realm for whatever reason, and they, like, hang out all the time and do, like, romantic stuff while Evil Crow is, like, running around. Evil Crow also, like, busts into Fun Boy's cell and, like, fully kills him, so, like, all the gang members are dead, despite redemption arcs for, like, three of them. Extremely worth noting that the head of the Lazarus group has been put into a younger body in this episode, and that younger body is Michael Weatherly, who is Donozo on NCIS. Like, I was watching this episode with friends for the first time, and we all in our own, like, places in time went, Donozo? Which is just insanely funny. He's hamming it up and having a great time. It was very weird to see him here. So in some places this episode is the last one, and in some there's one about, like, a cop killer on the loose that used to be a cop, and the cops have to stop him, and he's, like, capturing people and stuff. Sometimes this is placed before the episode that I just mentioned, but I did want to throw it in there. I don't find it that compelling as an episode, but it does exist, and it's very strange. Like, if you've noticed me not mentioning, like, numbers or episode names, the release history for the show has been so shoddy that it's hard. Like, pretty much everyone's got a different order for these episodes. They aired out of order. They've aired out of order in syndication ever since. It's hard to get a grasp on what goes where most of the time, but I will tell you how the show ends. So, we get the two Crow personas, and Eric is, like, in, like, deep shit, and Shelley is like, maybe I should, like, help out. So she, like, jumps off the bridge in the afterlife that she's been hanging out on for, like, a while, and it's not, like, really the afterlife, it's, like, fully purgatory, and it ends with her jumping off of the bridge to re-enter the mortal coil, and that's the last episode of The Crow Stairway to Heaven that we ever got. Now that we have a halfway decent grasp of everything that happened in the show, let's talk performances and nitpicks and things that I noticed from an editorial standpoint. Performances all around are pretty okay. Mark Dacascos has given the absolutely unenviable job of being the first person to play Eric Draven since Brandon Lee. It takes a lot of balls to do that, but you know, like,
I like Mark Dacascos in, like, a lot of other things. I think he was fantastic in John Wick 3. I don't think the show does him a lot of favors. The writing doesn't really know what to do with Eric a lot of the time. Is he quippy? Is he, like, angry all the time? Is he a sad boy? Like, they find it really hard to balance, especially because they have essentially split the two sort of sides of him, like, literally. I think they have a really hard time figuring out, like, a conceivable way of making this character work, because they have partitioned off the different aspects that make him the Crow. I think Mark does an admirable job. I think they really don't do justice to any of his, like, martial arts slash, like, stunt prowess, because he's, like, pretty good. Like, he does a lot of those roles. Like I said, his work in John Wick 3 is great. I think the way they shoot any of the fighting sequences in the show is just not doing anyone any favors. Not my fave, but, like, again, huge shoes to fill. Like, I don't know if anybody was ever gonna, like, do this amazing. Mark Gomez plays Albrecht. He's playing a cop. He does great. He's doing the TV cop thing. It's perfectly admirable. Sabine Carcenti plays Shelley. She's pretty compelling as a character. I think she's got some pretty good charisma going on. I just wish she wasn't sidelined as much as she is, because she's pretty much acting by herself on a green screen stage most of the time. And then it can get pretty difficult for even the most talented of actors. Again, just, like, thankless, like, work to do that. But I think she's pretty good, and I like that they've given Shelley more to do, obviously. Katie Stewart plays Sarah. Katie has actually gone on to have a pretty interesting stunt career post this. Obviously, when you're a child actor, you never know what you're gonna do when you're older. Looks like she stuck around the entertainment slash acting industry, which is pretty cool. I don't love her performance, but also, like, she's given, like, a lot of, like, insufferable kid actor stuff to do, so obviously that's not her fault. She's pretty good. After one season, despite pretty positive reception from critics, and the ratings were pretty good, definitely, like, a mid-sized hit, which is totally fine for season one of TV, especially for a niche sci-fi show, which was pretty popular in the late 90s. We had Buffy going on at this point, things like that. This fit in very well into, like, that kind of niche of TV at the time of sort of monster of the week stuff. The series was canceled in June 1999. The problem is, the production company that was making the Crow Stairway to Heaven was called Polygram, and they got sold to Universal Studios, and when Universal bought them out, they decided not to continue with Stairway to Heaven. This is weirdly prescient, because we've been seeing a lot of this sort of thing happening with the HBO Discovery merger. If you've been paying attention and wondering why HBO Max suddenly sucks really bad, very similar situation. I don't know how this happens every time I make one of these episodes, but it does. The producers were like, we can make a TV movie to wrap these things up, because it does end on a cliffhanger. We fully have no idea what's going to happen. That TV movie never happened, and then Bryce Zabel, the producer, sort of showrunner for Stairway to Heaven, was like, I wanted to make, like, a 6-hour miniseries to wrap this thing up, and it was going to pick up 5 years after the season one finale, which does seem like a pretty big jump. I have no idea what that would entail. Again, the thing that rubs me the wrong way, maybe the most, about the series is that it is intent on taking up a lot of time. I don't understand why I would want to see 5 years after a Crow story happens, even if they are a doomed to wander Crow. It doesn't, like, add up for me. Like, the immediacy of it is taken away when you do that. But anyway, so that's what happened to the Crow, Stairway to Heaven. Like, that's, it could have gone on, is the interesting thing, and there is, like, a small dedicated fan base for it. Like I said, Hannah Foster remains fairly popular with people who care about the Crow. And again, I don't think this series was all bad. There's definitely a lot of choices that I would not have made, but I can't say that they weren't at least a little bit interesting or offered something new to the canon. For me personally, if you don't want to watch the whole series, I highly recommend a few episodes. The two with Hannah Foster are great. The two with the Skull Cowboy are great. The last episode with Dinozo, where Eric is split into two personalities, kind of gives you the gist of the whole season because it's one of the last episodes. And if you want like a really like off the wall crazy episode, I highly recommend the Stuntman episode. I think ultimately the thing that sort of sinks the boat for me on this one is just that like no one working on the show can decide if we want to be a supernatural, like, again, Buffy monster of the week sort of thing that delves into like a mythos of what the Crow is and what they do, or if they want a buddy cop crime procedural with absolutely no supernatural elements. Like, there's, it's one foot in both, to the detriment of both sort of things that they're going for. And that sort of push and pull really takes away from what could have been a really fun show. This is definitely not one of my favorite pieces of the Crow, like, franchise. Like I said, there's a few episodes that I would recommend watching if you're a completionist like me, but I found most of it just kind of like, again, I just don't want to watch Eric Draven get a job and pay rent. I just don't. And also because it was made for TV in the 90s, it's so sanitized that any sort of edginess or stakes feels really low. Like, they don't even kill the gang in the first two episodes. Like, most of them just go to jail or go insane. It's interesting. And I think there is a real, like, given, like, I think coming back to the rumor that I reported on at the beginning of the episode that the new remake might be a TV miniseries or something like that, I think today with how miniseries and TV operates, there's a chance that that could be really good. But the fact of the matter is that this is so, the Stairway to Heaven is so of its time and place that it just doesn't succeed for me on a few of the different levels it was trying to go for. There's great moments and everyone is doing their best, but it just doesn't come together in a way that goes for any of the various directions it's kind of grasping for. That is our journey through The Crow, Stairway to Heaven, and I do want to give a quick shout out to Amelia Wellman's retrospective on Geeked Out, which helped me keep all my episodes straight and what happened in each one of them. I watched all of them, but they all kind of ran together, so thank you, thank you, thank you, Amelia. This episode would not have been possible without you. Thank you for your hard work of cataloging The Crow, Stairway to Heaven, because between the various sources of how I watched it, it was pretty hard to keep what was what in the right order. And I hope you enjoyed this episode too. Again, I don't think the Stairway to Heaven was like an entire lost cause. There's some really interesting stuff that goes on there, and it's absolutely worth checking out the Hannah Foster episodes. If you do anything, do those. And I don't even think that the idea of a Crow TV series is a bad one. It just shouldn't go on for 22 45-minute episodes in 1999 filmed in Canada. This is like a really dumb tidbit that I can neither confirm nor deny, and I have found no record of it being accurate, but apparently Mark Dacascos did not really like filming in Vancouver and had a hard time with it because it rained all the time. Can you believe? Again, can neither confirm nor deny, but I thought that was funny. Next time, we will do our CODA episode for Stairway to Heaven and talk about all of that good, good Canadian alternative rock featured on the show. But for now, I hope you enjoyed this retrospective of an interesting experiment in television and that you'll join us next time to talk about its music. Until then, I have been Randy, this has been Birdwatching, and I'll see you all soon.